Premier League on OTB.
Goal to Sterling! Raheem Sterling!
Exclusive Premier League live commentaries every Sunday. The very best expert analysis on your phone and for free. Download the OTB Sports app now.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Well, that can only mean Pat Nevin is with us. Evening, how are you doing?
I'm absolutely fine. I am slightly struggling to get my video on. I hope you can see me now.
We can see you now. We can see
Excellent
you now.
Excellent stuff. Yeah. I apologize to you. A wee bit slow about that. I'm fabulously well. It's a nice day here in Scotland. And I've had a mad few days, a completely mad few days. But then the start of the Premier League, everyone was going to have a mad few days. Do you want me to? I'm going to tell you about my mad few days, right? Because it's dead weird. On Friday, I was doing a Radio 4 show, an arts show, in, called Loose Ends. And then on Saturday, I was at Man United. And playing against Leeds, which is pretty exceptional with a 70,000 crowd there and six goals. Next day I was doing a bit at the Edinburgh Festival, the book festival, and today I've been in prison. So quite an eventful few days.
Oh man, I knew you would do this to me when we were tied for time. So I'll go in descending order. What were you doing in prison?
I know. I went to do a talk to some prisoners, and it was brilliant, absolutely fantastic. You know, they're stuck there for a long time, and it's really good to be able to share things and maybe get some nice messages across. And it was brilliant. It was, in fact, hopefully it was decent for them, but it's great. It was great for me. Yeah. You know, just going in and understanding some of their thoughts and positions, etc. But there's a wee bit of you when they say, "What were you doing the other day?" And you go, "Oh, I was at Old Trafford." Manchester United, and they look at you as if to say, "I'm going to get you." Having this weird, weird life. But no, it was magical. It was great fun.
And what was your takeaway from their thoughts or their positions or what they threw at you?
And it's really interesting because I think if you're, I mean, we've all been locked up for a while, I suppose. But the take is that they're dead keen to hear people. They don't get enough visits, understandably. They don't get the opportunities to, you know, voice thoughts and opinions, ask questions, and it was amazing to actually get that. Although what was very noticeable that in that was at the Edinburgh Festival the day before, I had my very posh accent on, but I wasn't like that when I was talking to the prisoners, like, you know.
I can imagine. I'm going to pick that up with you another time, because otherwise we're going to talk for 20 minutes about that and I'll have to say thanks very much and then we'll wonder what was that about. Spurs against Man City yesterday, I'm really curious to chat to you a bit about. I don't know how much of this you got to see, but very assured Man City start, and you were full sure, I think, that Tanganga at right back was going to have a long afternoon ahead, Grealish and Sterling in alternate turns to run at him, and he kept smashing them, and you thought, well, you're not going to last the game here at this rate. And Spurs, in fairness, calm, resolute, grew into the game. Dangerous in the counter-attack, got the goal. And City wilted a bit. They ran out of ideas. This was a really interesting game.
You've watched this before, we say. Even back to the Champions League final. They kind of ran out of ideas. You know, they had the plan. It was a weird one on that occasion. But when it didn't work, you thought, well, okay, what's next one? And they weren't really adapting it that much. Playing that way, and this is the way I think it's certainly the way I believe that Pep thinks about it. He thinks, keep on doing that, keep on keeping the ball, get in the dangerous positions, vast majority of the time, you'll end up with points. That's his thinking. And sometimes it won't work, you know, keep on going for it. I think it's too much to take, don't take that much away from it, first game of the season. There's players that are back that are not 100% yet, you know, that are not fully fit. There's players missing there. I don't think they'll play Mendy left back most of the time. I don't think Nathan Ake, which hurts me because I like it, Nathan Ake a lot. But I think Stones is more likely to be the player that plays in that more often. You can't ignore the Kevin De Bruyne not being on the pitch at the start and not being a big part of it, which would possibly make a difference as well. And on top of that, the possibility of Kane, if they do actually get him, that would make a difference. Because as we all spotted yesterday, Torres, for all the fact he's a good player, they don't need good players now. They need world-class players. This Premier League this season is going to be unbelievable. there are four shooting for it, definitely four shooting for it, and that's not been the case for a while. And if you've not got real strength everywhere, you'll get found out. But I won't take too much away for that game. You know, Spurs at home makes a big difference. I've actually been to see Spurs already this season, in a pre-season game down at Bridge, and I have to say, for a period, the latter part of the game, really impressed by them. Really structured, ordered well, getting the best out of some players. And funnily enough, without Harry there, they're kind of different. They're a bit different. I'm not saying they're better, but they're different. It was a real muscular, organised performance. And they could do okay this season. Don't think they've got strength and depth to like get in the top four. But they're going to be a tough team for anybody to visit. So City, yeah, a wee bit disappointing for them, particularly when you watch the starts others have made. You know, their main rivals have made. But I don't think it's panic buttons yet.
No, of course. For people who didn't see the game, City had, so they had Fernandinho starting, and it was Grealish to his left, and it was Gundogan to his right, and then up top it was Sterling, as you mentioned, Ferran Torres and Mahrez. So the way it broke down became fairly apparent after about 5 minutes. It was Grealish and Sterling ganging up on Tanganga. It was Gundogan and Mahrez trying to do their bit in the right. Fernandinho pretty much stayed in the middle. Ferran Torres, I mean, on Sky they were saying how, you know, much variety there was to his play, and he was coming short and running long, and it was so impressive. And I got to say, I found myself watching a lot of it thinking, this is incredibly rigid. Like, the heat map, I'd say, was fairly much bang on their formation at all times. Not once did you see Grealish popping up around Mahrez and trying to do something or some kind of clever interplay. And I was kind of thinking, this is very easy for Spurs to work out almost. And what did you make of just how rigid it was, and kind of slow it was, and kind of turgid the whole thing was? This was like anti what you want from Man City.
Yeah, and not what you expect. I agree with that. I think De Bruyne is usually the one that adapts that, because he pops up everywhere and he drags people and he sees where the gaps are. Grealish, I would hope, would grow into that player as well. And there is every possibility that you can actually have two of them in a game and they can be completely interdependent. You can just go anywhere, move anywhere. But you maybe need a little bit of rigidity behind them. But on this occasion, yeah. But it's early. And it's early for Grealish. Mm. I mean, he's playing for Man City. He's playing for Aston Villa. He plays in a very set position for Aston Villa for most of the time. It's coming off left. It's picking up in good areas. And he's brilliant at it. That will be probably slightly too rigid. And it may well not be exactly where he ends up at Manchester City because of the skills he's got. What Pep's got to do, and what he's done many times in the past, is find out, okay, where are you going to be the best for us? Where can we use your skills? And don't be surprised in a few weeks' time you find out, starting on the right and fading in for that sort of area sometimes, Grealish. Don't be surprised at that at all. It didn't work that way in this occasion. I still think it's teething problems. And there's a few of them. Yeah. I do think a few of them don't look absolutely at the pace of some of the other teams. Weirdly enough, I can't give you any good excuse for that. It's just some players come back at different, at different levels. But them, yeah, not wild blowing people away yet. But again, it's only a game. I've had that before where they've started off a little bit sluggish and then went on monster runs.
Yes.
To do it, I still think they probably could do with Kane. If they can get Kane, then I think all bets are off and I think they're favourite straight away.
Yeah, and I did read they've had an interrupted, largely due to COVID, but they've had an interrupted pre-season, Man City, so maybe that is factored in. Does yesterday's result have any input into the Kane situation? What's your read on what's going to happen over the next 16 days?
Well, they put any money you like, probably that 100 million on that he wasn't going to go before that game, because there's no way he's going to get a game against Manchester City, against Tottenham. But, you know, it's going to be brinkmanship all the way. More often than not in the modern game, if a player wants to go and a club wants to get him and he pushes it, then it probably happens. The fly in the ointment is it's Harry Kane, because Harry Kane seems generally such a nice bloke, and it's kind of for him to behave in that way, to push it that far, he has to actually get slightly out of character. Now, he's gone kind of a little bit out of character by allegedly not turning up in time, but he probably needs to push it a wee bit more than that. Mm. Whether that's morally the right thing to do depends on one thing, and depends on what was that agreement he had. Did he really have an agreement to leave? And if he had a gentleman's agreement, I'm with him. I'll say, yeah, gentleman's agreement, They said you could go. If they're deliberately holding it up and being totally unreasonable, I'm okay with Harry just messing about a wee bit.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
But,
yeah.
And it's because people make you promises. I don't care if the promise is on a bit of paper or not. It's a promise. And considering what he's done for that club, if he's been let down by a promise, I think that's unacceptable.
You know, I agree with that, by the way. I do agree, because I've heard a lot of people saying, don't be so naive, gentlemen's agreement. What is that? It's football, grow up. But I actually think you're right on that.
The thing is, the reason why I'm doing it is because I've had them before, and they reneged on one or two of mine. And the first one, I said, okay, my fault, I made a mistake, I'll never do that again. Second one, near the end of my career, I trusted them, and they didn't. So I walked out of the club. I said, no, I'm not coming back.
Yeah,
I'm leaving. And they said, well, you can't play for anyone else. And I said, so what? I care. I knew they'd come to an agreement anyway. So, you know, I think there's a morality there that you can actually hold by. I do hope Harry gets it. I mean, it's nothing against Spurs. It really isn't against Spurs. And they try and live without Harry at some point. And if they get that money in, it's about spending it wisely. And they've got a new manager in there who's a talented coach. And, you know, he's got one or two good contacts himself, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He might be able to spend that money very wisely, maybe even more wisely than the original bail money was used.
One last thought from this game, and I'll talk to you more about Grealish, I suspect, over the coming weeks, and will he pass the ball more quickly, or is instinct to dribble, will that be kind of knocked out of him? But connected with Grealish and Sterling, Neville was on commentary on Sky Sports, and he was, like we all were, I think, looking at Tanganga in the first 10 minutes, where he had to deal with about 8 one-on-ones and smash the players and kept getting away with it. But Neville was saying in his day, which I guess increasingly is, you know, ancient history, but in his day, what happens there is he drags Beckham back and, you know, you help me out. Whereas what's very noticeable, he said, in the modern game now is, like, Højbjerg was coming across a touch, but only a touch. He's three-man midfield. And, like, Lucas Moura, who I'm sure if you were asked, if he was asked to go back against Man City, he would go back. So clearly he wasn't being. There's almost this trend now in the game where it's like, you deal with it, you're the right back, you have to be able to defend one-on-one, which is bold and obviously fun to watch.
Yeah, I remember Gordon Strachan saying to me many years ago, when he was told to beat his winger by someone of the Stanley Matthews era, he said, yeah, I'll do that. I'll beat his fullback. He says, yeah, I'll do that once I get by the deep-lying midfielder, the covering midfielder, the fullback himself, and then the sweeper.
Yeah.
Right, so because usually, you're right, it did. People were covering. I do think there are adaptations in the game at the moment that, if you look around, teams that win things are the brave ones, the positive ones, the teams that attack generally. You know, that comes from the Barcelona times, etc. But you go and look at it, and the teams that are getting the furthest now, you know, be it that great Liverpool team that win the league, be it Manchester City themselves, yeah, deal with your problem. The thing is, not that, you know, you're playing at the elite level now, you better be a good defender. So, you know, if you are somebody like Walker at fullback, you'd almost say, yeah, you just stand up to that. If you're one-on-one and it's Rudiger that's marking you, you're still going to have a tough job. But there's other players you think, yeah, one-on-one, party time, let's go. And you just need to believe in your fullbacks in that way. I do think that you mentioned Højbjerg, he's big for them and a little bit of cover in that area. But that's what City do. That's why they play wide players such as Mahrez and Sterling. They try to stretch you to try and get those one-on-ones. They want to get to the byline. But you're right, you've got to trust your players now and again. I think the Mourinho era was, and I'm not just talking about Spurs, I mean long before that, he was almost the epitome of that. You know, cover, and then we'll play when we get half a chance. Yeah, it's just not the style at the moment. I'm delighted about it.
Yeah.
Test players, they should be good enough. Having said that, if you are getting absolutely trashed by your winger, you still bring somebody back. You will still do it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'll come to Old Trafford in a second, given that you were there. But just on Chelsea beating Crystal Palace, the Trevor Chaloba celebration, that was one of the moments of the weekend, I thought. I figure if I was ever in that position where you'd been at the academy all the way through and finally get your chance and finally score that goal, the initial instinct is to celebrate, and then it just hit him. It just like hit him like a ton of bricks. Oh my God, I can't believe I've done this.
I very rarely remember that happening when a player that hit him like that. It happens now and again. But it's such a hit and it's such a shock. You know, I was at all the Chelsea preseason games and he played in them all.
Right.
And Chelsea had something like 40 players. She was mental. Zappa Costas and people like that. Billy had no idea was still at the club, right? Emerson's, you know, the phenomenal amount of players that were coming through. And you thought, but none of them are going to get a chance. Tuchel's just having a look. And every time you watch Chalaba, you thought, yeah, you're doing all right, right, and you're comfortable with the ball. He is a centre defensive midfielder player, so he's good on the ball. He'll pass the ball. So you add that to a good defender. Party time for somebody like Tuchel, because you're coming out with the ball. And he's the one that broke through, and it was when he played in the Super Cup, that was great as well. But he still doesn't think it's real. He absolutely doesn't think it's real, because he knows that Thiago Silva's there, and Azpilicueta might move back. And you're just not expecting it. And then he gets a call to play in the first Premier League game. And he's he looks quite cool, but he's probably in bits at that point in time. Plays well, but then when he scores that goal, that's off the scale. He would never, in a month of Sundays, seen this a month ago. He'd have thought he'd be out on loan by now. He absolutely would have thought he was back out on loan. There he is in the first team, and the fans are going wild for him because it's the new local, you know, boy through the academy. It's an astonishing for the modern times.
Yes,
to come through that quickly from nowhere. We all talk about the amount of people, and I've worked there a lot, and I see a lot of people there a lot. He wasn't in the top 8 or 9. You're talking about Ross Bartley coming back. You're talking about Loftus-Cheek maybe coming back. The whole raft of names. His was never mentioned. And there he goes. It was a fabulous, honest moment.
Yeah.
And do you know, when we're surrounded just now in many sports by the journeys that people are on and the tears, which you really do wonder about. You didn't wonder about them, did you? You
thought, no. Yeah. Well, sure. And you could see it, the way the teammates almost jumped on him as they realised he was probably shedding a tear or two. And I mean, it's rare you see a Chelsea team get that excited about a goal against Crystal Palace in a match they're pretty comfortable in. It was a lovely thing.
Can I say one thing about that? It's a magical thing. It's every football fan talking to you here. Try and think about a moment with your team where you come on and there's, there's a new player. And then about 20 minutes in or half an hour in, you look to the person next to you and go, oh my God. And your spine tingles. I had it 2 weeks ago. I was up watching Celtic and Fukuhashi, the Japanese guy. He's that new. And honestly, I watched him and he scored 3 goals and he could have had 6. However, it's what he did apart from that. And I looked around and I just watched all these fans looking at each other going, how much are those letters going to cost for the back of the strip? Because I'm getting one tomorrow. It's a magical moment for a football fan, isn't it? When you have that moment of the unexpected player that comes through and suddenly you think, I think I might have seen one of my new favourite player. It was magical for him, and it's a great thing for anybody to see.
So at Old Trafford then, you mentioned you were there, 75,000. Varane does the wave to the crowd before the game. They go with Pogba in, I suppose, the Rashford role, Bruno behind Greenwood, Daniel James, because it's a lead, starts, so that's just the rule, and Fred McTominay behind them. And I'm curious for your thoughts on this, because they obviously beat Leeds quite well last year at Old Trafford, so there's a degree of hesitancy about getting too excited about that 5-1 win. What did you make United? What are you seeing this year from them?
Well, this was the joy of actually being at a game that I might not have seen otherwise. Watching the telly, none of us can see the whole game, right? But when you're sitting there and you're above it, you're looking down. Leeds did this really intelligent thing. They got Cork to stand right on Bruno Fernandes, right on him, face on him for the first 15, 20 minutes. Bruno couldn't get a touch. Wasn't getting near it. We were playing that system you were talking there, right? And we know Bielsa is an inverted commas tactical genius. When Ollie changed it, and he changed it to a diamond, and the diamond, it was almost a two at the back, but certainly the two forwards just split. They just split, and it left a gap in the middle. And when they left that gap in the middle, Pogba and Bruno just started moving back and forward. And they had no clue how to deal with it. None at all. And they just kept on getting these. And there was other things that was going on. Leeds will attack you. Man United love breaking. Right, okay, so it's party time. That's why they score 11 goals in 2 games or whatever against them. That's the biggest reason why. But the other reason, just watching how quickly, I mean, Bielsa must have changed his tactics 3 or 4 times in the game. Went back 3, back 4, moved players all over the place. It was all, he just kept on changing. He was trying different things. All he didn't, he did a couple. And those couple of changes were phenomenal, and they were brilliant, and it was a joy. And you and I will talk to the cows come home about Pogba, and I will tell you when he's brilliant. And although Bruno got man of the match and he got three goals, Pogba was the best player on that field. He was just astonishing. And every time he got the ball, and by the way, he was also at fault. Pogba was at fault for the Leeds goal. But you'll allow that for what he did up the other side. If they can get them to be as sympathetic to each other's play as they were in that game, they're absolutely up there challenging. I know this is a team that looked that good. You've not got Jadon Sancho just come on and how he kicked the ball, but he's got to come. You know, you've got Varane to come into that back line, which is going to make them much better. Cavani wasn't even there. Rashford's off injured. They've got a chance of being quite special, but it needs that effort and that intelligence from the whole time. But it was a joy, and the noise was, I know we've been away for a long time, and some have been the odd sort of loud game, etc., but the noise in that place was just fantastic. It was deafening. It was great to get through it. But the lift that gave to United players, very, very noticeable. Remember last season, United were better away from home than they were at home.
Yeah.
Well, look at them now. They were so lifted. It was, honestly, they were brilliant to watch. It was an absolute joy to watch them.
Okay. I'm really hoping all four, the big four, fire here when we get this Premier League season like never before. Listen, we're slightly out of time, I'm afraid. So from Old Trafford to Radio 4 to Edinburgh Fringe to prison, Pat Nevin. I mean, I look forward to next Monday. Beat that.
Yeah, I'm going for a wee adventure now.
See you later. Pat Nevin, thank you. Appreciate it.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Okay, you're welcome along to the football show. Very happy to say Mr. Kevin Kilbane joins us. Big happy Mayo heading him. Hello.
Hi, Joe. How you keeping?
Yeah, very well. I'm told you couldn't even see the game. You were listening on Midwest in agony.
Yeah, Michael D, we had partisan commentary all the way I had at the weekend, Joe. It was great stuff. And I watched it all back. I've watched it back since. But it was just, it was an incredible listen when I was listening to it live. And obviously watching it back afterwards, there were so many key moments, wasn't there? So it was great. It was great stuff. And, you know, one more hurdle to get over the line now. But hopefully that can happen. But we'll see. We take nothing for granted. You know that.
I love that you're talking like one of the players here.
Well, you don't, though, do we? Well, let's be fair, Joe. How many times have we been in this position over the years where we've had this conversation, you and I, this is it now. This weekend is going to be the one, absolutely. So, no, nothing for granted, and there'll be no Mayo person that'll be taking it for granted at all, I'm sure of that.
Yeah, it was an incredible game. You'd need to watch it back about two or three times to get all the moments. It's so many key moments, so many extraordinary little passages of play. It was an epic. It was like this very visceral occasion. Yeah.
It was absolutely amazing. It really was. And you looked at little things. I was actually just, when I was watching it back last night, just thinking, you know, Conor Loftus' point right on the stroke of half time to take it to a 6-point game. And that was obviously a huge moment, wasn't it? And the bit of a breeze that Mayo had with them in the second half as well, and the momentum that they gained from the first 2 or 3 minutes of the second half, it was just unbelievable. And then obviously Rob Henley with that at the end. You know, I think every Mayo man and woman were delighted with him, and you know that he got that moment at the end of the game to do that. It was just incredible. And as I said, I think we're all delighted, and I'm sure there's one or two others in my position at the weekend that would have just absolutely thrilled with it all. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing. Will you fly back for the final?
I don't think I can, Joe. I don't think I can come back. I was absolutely nailed on to get it all sorted, but I don't think I can. I don't think I can get back. Our little girl here starts school on the Monday, so it's just a bad weekend for us. So I don't think I can get back. So no, family matters, I suppose.
You're maturing. I respect that.
Yeah, exactly. What would I have said a couple of years ago? There wouldn't have even been a question, would there? It wouldn't have even been a thought in my head.
So let's talk football. Really interesting opening weekend. We've already talked Man City Spurs are good with Pat Nevin, so we won't labour that point. I am curious, though, as somebody who's been in dressing rooms and understands how these Harry Kane-type dilemmas work for both player and dressing room and club, what do you make of the way he's played it over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I kind of, I think we all knew the way he was going to play it. Certainly once the message was coming out at the end of the season, even prior to the Euros, that he wanted to go, it was, you know, just prior or just short of him actually saying it around the Euros, look, I'm gone, I'm desperate to leave the place, which of course he absolutely is. I've said it to you. I've been on with you so many times, Joe, haven't we? We've had this sort of conversation around a player when they're about to leave a club, and I've seen so many players absolutely shafted by clubs through the course of my career. Not at the level of Harry Kane, absolutely, but where the club had every single bit of power within them to do whatever they wanted. You know, players training at 6 o'clock in the evening, round the clock, just to piss them off, essentially, just to make sure that if they're not going to sign a contract, they're going to make it as difficult as they can for the player. Whereas it is different now. We're in a different era, in a different game, and the player does have the power invariably with what's happening. So I think he's played it exactly the way that he feels as though it should be played. Daniel Levy's notorious in it seems, from what clubs have said over the years, in dealing with him and getting deals over the line, first of all, whether he's buying or selling. So I think Harry Kane's got a battle on to try to make this deal get over the line. But the only thing he can do is just do it right by his contract, turn up for training, do the right things. But it just, I just feel as though that maybe that the conversation at times could be a little bit forthright between the player and Daniel Levy, because I would imagine that Levy and Kane have said very little to each other. And Levy, because of Kane's stature within the club, I think they could pick up the phone to each other and go, look, because Levy knows full well with what's happened over the last few years. And again, we've had the conversation about Kane for 5 years now, it seems, that, look, Kane's going to go. He's going to go this summer, or I'm sure he's going to go this summer. But he's continuously said he wanted to break record at Spurs. So I just like to see the conversation, you know, people being man about it, essentially. Harry Kane being able to pick up the phone to Levy and say, look, this is what's happening. I want to go. You want to get the best possible price for me. I know that it's not ideal. It's not great for anybody here, the way things are going to go, but let's just get this deal struck. But there's going to be a standoff, I'm sure, in the coming weeks before anything can be done.
Yeah, well, it depends who you listen to. Certainly the Sunday Times yesterday, Jonathan Northcroft led with a piece which he said was an exclusive. And the word was that with 16 days left in the transfer window, Spurs will not sell Kane. They feel it doesn't give them enough time to go out and buy. Even if City do pay the 160 million sterling, it says here, Spurs are still very reluctant to sell with just now 16 days left in the transfer window. Now, who knows? I mean, 160 million is very hard to turn down for a 28-year-old, but that's what they're saying, and I'm sure Daniel Levy is leaking this out to the papers, and so that's where we are. Man City yesterday, with Ferran Torres leading the line, and admittedly with, you know, De Bruyne is still to get fit and Foden to come back into the side, but they really did look like a team that do need that focal point. I suspect, having lost that game 1-0, having lost the Champions League final 1-0, that their willingness to hit 150, 160 million might just have grown a touch yesterday.
Mm. Yeah, and that's normally the case. To be honest with you, Joe, I didn't see the game. Sure. But you're keeping across it. You're seeing the results as they come in, and it was a surprise, I think, to most people when they've seen the result coming through. But this is what invariably happens when a club is desperate to get a player in, and they know that they're short in a certain position, and they know that they need to get that deal over the line quickly. That you meet the club, the selling club's valuation a lot more quicker after a result like that, don't you? That's what usually does happen. So it'll be an interesting couple of weeks. And I know I didn't even see the piece that Jonathan Norcross had written there, but I just think that, and I've said it before as well, around mentally, the mental space that Harry Kane's in right now, is he going to be right? It might be Christmas before he really decides. And I think he will say, I'm knuckling down, I'm going to get on with it. But it might be Christmas before you really start to see the best of him. So Tottenham have lost him for that 6 months, I'd feel, anyway. Certainly two or three of those months, because he's not necessarily going to be up to speed, up to the pace of things actually physically on the pitch in the coming weeks. So it's going to be a while, I think, before you get him right as it is. And notoriously, Harry Kane has always been quite poor at the start of the season, or his goal-scoring form has always been quite poor at the start of the season. So if that is the case, then what is the point in... If that is the case and that does happen, what is the point in Kane in Kane staying around the place. You might as well, as you say, at 28 years of age, take that money in January and give Nuno Espirito Santo the best possible chance to get the best players in the next year or 18 months.
I know you did see Manchester United 5, Leeds 1 on the Saturday morning, as it was over here, very early for you over there. So a lot of people got up and watched this game and were looking forward to this game. I mean, it was really interesting on a few fronts. If anyone didn't catch it, Greenwood played through the middle as a nine. Pogba was maybe more in that Rashford role. Bruno through the middle behind Greenwood. Daniel James getting his guaranteed start against Leeds every year, as he will. And Fred McTominay behind them. How did you like Pogba in that role? How did you like Greenwood? What did you make of this game?
Well, you couldn't help but like Pogba. I thought, do you know when he plays in midfield, Joe, when he's playing in a two or a three, he seems to run out of position too freely and leave his team exposed. I think when he is given a more advanced role like he was playing at the weekend, if he runs out of position, it's not necessarily going to hurt the team as much. And clearly you could see without the ball, as I was saying, his work rate was top class, I felt. At the start of the game, I thought his attitude was spot on at the start of the match. But then you could see the touches coming in. And I mean, if you looked at him in the summer, Joe, potentially was certainly before France got knocked out, he's the best midfield player at the tournament across the summer. So he's coming into this Premier League season in full form, ready to, you would feel as though, to really have a good goal this year, whether he stays or goes or wherever he goes, even if he moved in the next couple of weeks. I felt as though that you saw that little bit of player playing with a bit of freedom, given the confidence to go out and play by his manager in Solskjaer. I just thought he was just absolutely sensational. And the rest of United's team around him, although it was a slow start before they got really going, before the goals started to flow, they looked solid enough. I think they looked comfortable, I think, throughout the game. And I think given the players that's due to come back into that side and due to come in, certainly with Varane adding strength to them as well, United looked a prospect, didn't they? They looked seriously good, given how Leeds played, because Leeds, last season, they started the season brilliantly well. You know, they came up off the back of a brilliant season, momentum was with them, the high energy that they play. I think they nullified that threat from Leeds. They stopped that real high press that Bielsa puts on them. And I think throughout the game, as it wore on, they just took the total steam out of Leeds and they looked totally dominant. They looked a class apart as you reached the 70-minute mark of that game.
Yeah. And then so Fernandes did his thing as well. It's odd that he has scored just six goals for Portugal in 5 years. So if you get the United version of...
I've seen a tweet from you about United. Hey, listen, yeah, I do like that.
If you get the United version of Bruno and the French version of Pogba, you've got a team there with those two. So, like, I mean, is Pogba so suited to that area of the pitch that Rashford might struggle to get back in?
Probably not. I think when they're going to be at full strength, you would imagine Pogba will probably be asked to play a little bit deeper and Rashford will come back in the side. But I think you do learn the message from playing Pogba and how you play Pogba is if you can play him with a bit more freedom and you get stability behind him, you might even be able to play him as a 10, playing with two sitters behind a 4-2-3-1 system to get him more advanced and having more of an influence with his creativity, with his ability that he's got, because he does switch off defensively. You can't get away from that. I think, as I was saying before, I think he runs out of position at times, leaves his team exposed. And that's where United have struggled of getting the best out of Pogba over the years, when he's run out of position, when he's had to play a disciplined role. He certainly was never going to play for Mourinho, was he, the way that Mourinho lines his sides up. So Solskjaer has been getting the best out of him, or getting better performances out of him over the last year or 18 months since he's taken over. But I think if you look at United in general, they've got too many players in certain positions that Pogba's going to have to play in midfield, and it's just about getting the stability around him in the middle of the park that's going to get the best out of him, I'd feel. I don't think he's going to play, he's not going to play ahead of Rashford really, Joe, because you're going to get Rashford and Pogba into that same side for United. They're going to be a better side with those two in it, so you'd think that naturally would think that Rashford's definitely going to play on the left-hand side further forward.
Yeah, I would have thought so. It's going to be interesting to see what their best side is. Like, they have an unbelievably strong squad now in terms of, you know, various players like Sancho was on the bench, for instance, and Cavani to come back in. So what is their best 11 in the bigger games? That's going to be really interesting to see what they find. Like, Greenwood up front as a 9, his finish was sublime. You know, the quality there is just so eye-catching, and he does have those moments where you stop and say, you realise again, oh, he can do that too, and he's got that in his armoury, and
yeah,
wow, this is really exciting. So how quickly, and this with Cavani there as well, it's not urgent, but how quickly can he get up to speed as number nine to lead the line for United?
Greenwood, you mean? Sorry, yeah. Or yeah. Cavani?
Well, I'm saying Cavani in the squad, it's not urgent. Like, he doesn't need to do it for this season necessarily. Yeah. But I mean, you would think he's pretty close to doing it.
Yeah, I think so. You can see with the goal. I mean, the goal was great. I think obviously the ball from Pogba was sublime that put him through. But he's quick. I don't think he's lightning quick, is he? I think he's quick that he can get away from a defender. But even when the Leeds defender was trying to get back across him, I think he had the awareness to step his body across him just to stop him getting anywhere near him and then tee himself up for the strike. He finishes brilliant with both feet, doesn't he? So he is, and he's had that full pre-season. He would have been one of the first back for Man United pre-season. He's not had an international tournament to disrupt his development this year. So that's why you probably will see him start a lot of the games up until maybe the end of September, even into October, because of the fitness levels. But I think he's just going to get better and better, Joe. He is. The more games that he plays, obviously he's going to get better and better with the players that surround him, with Sancho probably creating chances for him as well, Rashford, Pogba, and all these players that they've got from the creative sense. He will get better and better. But the luxury that Solskjaer does have, as you say, with Cavani, he's got the two that can come in, and you forget in Martial, you know, this might give him the kick up the backside that he needs, where you might start to see Martial produce some of the form that we know he can produce. It looks as though he's going to be moved on, don't get me wrong, but he's a name you forget for all his ability. We talk about Pogba over the last few years, and he's been a bit like Martial. We've waited for Pogba to seriously kick on at times. He's not necessarily done it in the big games. He's not necessarily had the defensive mind on his game, Pogba. Martial's been the same. I think United don't look great when he started matches, but when he's came off the bench in certain games, he looks a world beater. So to have him coming off the bench certainly gives United different options as well going forward.
For sure. We've got this big four then, and so United are very much part of it. You feel just with their talent and the moments they can produce, they might not need to dominate games, because they didn't dominate enough games last year. They're often just a team that come up with great moments of quality because they've got such brilliant players. That should be enough for them to beat a huge amount of teams across this Premier League season and to really increase in the number of points they had at the end of last year. What's the concern with United? What is the weakness for you that would jump out in terms of actually winning a league title this year?
You would have said defensively, wouldn't you, the way that they've gone forward at times, and as I spoke about Pogba and certain players that's playing in the middle of the park that haven't necessarily been able to provide the stability to, whether it's Wan-Bissaka or Luke Shaw that's getting forward in that defensive structure. But Varane coming in there gives them that pace that they can actually go, you know, they can leave Varane back one-on-one at times and they're going to be fine. He's got the pace to deal with anything. It is in midfield. I like McTominay. I don't necessarily, and I've said it constantly about Fred, he's done quite well over the last year or so for United, but I don't see him as being a real dominant player that's going to control the game for United. He's a high-energy player rather than someone that's going to control the ball for them. That's why they need McTominay alongside him. Matic is not the answer as well. He's probably on, certainly on the wane in his career terms anyway. So they probably need somebody, a midfielder or someone that's going to give them that stability in midfield that's going to play behind Pogba, as I was saying earlier. But they look to me like they've got a strong 1-18 now. Goalkeeper, of course, you know, is Henderson going to be that main player for them alongside De Gea? I don't know, Joe. I don't know. Maybe the goalkeeper's seriously a position that they've not got a world-class goalkeeper at the moment in there, have they? But I think in general, the squad, Joe, looks very, very strong. It does look strong, you have to say that.
Yeah. So the Premier League season kicked off the night before. Brentford 2, Arsenal 0. Thomas Frank with the kids in the crowd, Warm the Heart, Hey Jude being sung. Yeah. Brentford Community Stadium. I mean, I know if they stay in the Premier League, within 2 or 3 years, it'll be the Qatar Airways Stadium. But for now, it's lovely that it's called the Brentford Community Stadium. So there was a nice little touch of romance to kick off the Premier League season. And it'll be interesting to see how Brentford go. As for Arsenal, I mean, you just run out of things to say about Arsenal because it's so grim and it seems like they're flailing. So they were eighth last year, Kev. You look at the Premier League as it stands this year. The big four will be the big four. You would back Leicester to go fifth again. Last year, West Ham and Spurs finished ahead of Arsenal. Leeds were behind them. Everton were behind them in 10th. Arsenal were about 8th. Everything just points to Arsenal finishing about 8th again and very little progress.
Yeah, I agree. 8th to 10th looks probably where they are. And to look at the goals conceded, particularly the second one, you know, long throw bouncing in the penalty area. And if you looked at them throughout the game, Joe, as well, I have been critical of Xhaka over the years, but look at him across the course of this summer at the Euros and how well he played for Switzerland. Now you're seeing what Xhaka is all about again, aren't you, really? And that's how I felt with Arsenal there. There's something that's gone wrong over the last 10, maybe even 15 years there at Arsenal, that they've not been able to get themselves out of it, no matter how many players they've brought in to try and change the situation. They could go on... Who have they got the next two now, Joe? Is it Man City and... it's not Spurs, is it? They've got two of the top sides in the next couple of games, haven't they? I know Man City's one of them. But they could give Man City a great game and go up against them. They could play counter-attacking football against them and maybe even get a result. But it is, whoever it would be this season, whether they're going to be playing Wolves, you know, Brighton, as it was Brentford at the weekend, whoever they're going to play when they come up against that type of team, you never fancy them. You never fancy them because all those sides think they've got a chance against them. Go and press them high when they're in possession of the ball. Are they good enough to really soak up pressure in the games when they're under pressure as well? They're not. That's what it is. There's a real weakness there again about them. And, you know, watching Everton, I would say certainly at the weekend, you're saying obviously they finished ahead of them last season. I think Everton are probably in a better position than Arsenal right now. So they're slipping maybe out the top eight again. And that's the way that it looks to me. So I think it's going to be a struggle of a season for Arsenal again, yeah.
Yeah, they have Chelsea next week and then they're away to Man City. That's the next two for
Arsenal.
Yeah,
Chelsea, Man City, yeah.
And like the Lacazette-Aubameyang situation seems very shaky as well. So, you know, Balogun started up front. Lacazette, there's been speculation for some time that he wants away. He's in the final year of his contract. And then Aubameyang, who didn't have his best season last year, you know, he comes into this season off one goal in his last 11. There are now reports of a certain coolness in the relationship between him and Arteta. Don't know to what extent that's true or not. They signed Ben White, obviously, in defence, although I saw Jamie Carragher was scathing over Ben White, says he doesn't think he's a dominant enough defender. But like the Lacazette-Aubameyang situation, on top of just this cultural issue at the club, means I don't really know how this improves or how Arteta gets to grips with it. Like, thus far, Arteta speaks very calmly and speaks quite well, and obviously, you know, we know what a great player he was, and he was alongside Guardiola, so he's seen how things should work, and yet doesn't really feel like much is happening under his watch.
Yeah. Very little's changed since Unai Emery, I have to say that. Very little's changed since Wenger, hasn't he? We're still looking at these frailties, and maybe just going back of what you're saying there, what Jamie Carragher is saying about Ben White, you know, it didn't look dominant enough just to deal with the messy stuff around the game. He's very good on the ball, and I think he's going to be a very good defender maybe going forward, but he's got a lot to learn. And that Arsenal defence is still always, I feel, learning on the job. Mm. When there's no real leader that's going to control them at the back. Up front, as you say, with Aubameyang and Lacazette, who are the two big players for them over the last few years, they look as though they want away because they're not getting the success. They feel as though that they should be playing Champions League football, or certainly Aubameyang does, doesn't he? So when you're not playing at the top, in the top level as European or world footballers, when they come to play for a top club, they want to be playing Champions League football. And if that's not presented to them season after season, like it has been with Arsenal, there's only one way it's going to go, and that's going to put more pressure on Arteta. And as you say, Mikel... you know, obviously played alongside Mikel. He is very, very calm. Nothing would seem to get upset him when he was a player. But sometimes when you're in that position as a coach, you might need to react certain ways in certain circumstances. And that's what it might take with Arteta. He might have to start reacting differently and try to get a bit firmer with that group of players. But it's been done before and it's been said before. So there's huge problems, Joe. There is huge problems. And there's going to continue to be huge problems because Arsenal again are in the position where it's almost like they need an overhaul to get the best out of the team.
Yeah, I mean, they just feel increasingly irrelevant as a club. And Martin Keown, I don't want to get you in trouble here with your old teammate Arteta, but Martin Keown, I was reading, was on TalkSport on Friday and was saying of Arteta that around the training ground he has a bit of an ego and isn't necessarily universally popular, was the phrase he used. Would that surprise you to hear that about Arteta?
Yeah, it would actually. Yeah. Mikel went about his business, certainly when he was a player. He wasn't very loud in the dressing room. He was certainly a player that, obviously, exceptional footballer, brilliant footballer, but he was quiet and thoughtful about how he'd speak to people and spoke to people in a very respectful manner. Even when I've met him since we've parted ways across our careers, Mikel has always been a good guy as far as I'm concerned. And okay. I don't necessarily see him being that type of character. But again, coaches react differently when they go in that main job and that main position. So I don't know. I couldn't even comment on what Martin Keown's saying there about him. But he's probably getting the word that could be the case. But I would never have seen that about Mikel, no.
You mentioned Everton. So Rafa and Everton. This is like Paul Joyce going to manage Mayo. This is interesting.
Yeah, I know.
So obviously that was a good start for them at the weekend. I only saw highlights of this game, and certainly Match of the Day were saying Everton were all about crosses. It was quite direct football, yeah, in a modern way, not just booting the ball long, but it was exciting and it kind of suited what Goodison Park generally want, traditionally want. Kind of, they're not necessarily a fan base down the years who've watched, 100 passes in the build up to a goal. Like even in your day there and Moyes' day, you think of the likes of Baines and Pienaar and just, getting forward, getting down the wings. Football with a bit of tempo to it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And sometimes when you use the word direct, it's something that's like, oh, they're a direct side long ball team. That certainly wasn't the case this week. And they've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's brilliant in the air. He scored a brilliant diving header for his goal that he scored. But his hold-up play is excellent. Richarlison, he is hit and miss, let's be honest, but when he has his good days, Richarlison's very, very good and he can be exceptional at times. But you're right in saying that. They signed Andros Townsend and Damari Gray for the reason that Benitez wants a direct side in the way that they're going to be getting into wider areas, getting good crosses into the penalty area, and they have to get bodies obviously in there to get on the end of them. And it was very much like that, but it was exciting to watch. It was good. And if I use, when I'm talking about direct teams, I would call Liverpool a direct team. I think Liverpool are very like that. They play counter-attacking football, get the ball forward quickly and play in the opposition's half. And that's the way that I like to see teams playing. I've always felt that that's exciting to watch. I've always felt that when teams are passing forward, running forward, getting into wider positions, putting early crosses into the penalty area, that's how I like to see my teams playing. And I love to watch teams playing like that. So Everton, under Benitez, I think they're going to go down that sort of way. They had a defensive structure. It was a bad error from Keane for the goal. Brilliant finish from Armstrong when he got through one-on-one to score his goal. But other than that, Everton looked very solid. I thought they dealt with long balls played into the area themselves, the set pieces that was going in there. I thought they defended very, very well, which you expect from Benitez's team. That's the way they're going to be. But I think there was a licence for Decore to get forward, who... he's a player I've liked over the years. I liked him when he was at Watford. I think he's a player that should maybe score more goals for the ability that he's got. So he might be a player this year, Decore, that you might see get close to double figures for Everton. And he can give that assistance to Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison, or whoever it's going to be for goals this year. So it should be good.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he goes. And like, however sophisticated football gets, direct play and sticking crosses into a box, like no defender, as long as there's football, will enjoy defending crosses, good crosses, because you can't see what's behind you. You have people running across you. You're trying to keep an eye on the ball coming in. There's always a lot going on there. I mean, defenders with everything in front of them, that's where they, enjoy a game in many ways, and they're in control of a game. Yeah. But I mean, you're running back towards your own goal, and there's pace down a wing and cross coming in. That's where stuff becomes a bit miserable. And you're defending 20 of them a half, you'll soon get tired of it, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. And Joe, I'd probably say to you as well, I know that you like watching individuals and how they go about things at times in the pitch. Just watch Dominic Calvert-Lewin if you get the chance to watch him in the next few weeks. Watch his movement and how he attacks balls. He'll always make two movements. He'll always pull onto the shoulder of a defender, then try to get across him. He's incredible in the air. He's, you know, he's 6'3", whatever he is, Calvert-Lewin. But his movement in the area, the way that he goes and attacks balls, I think even from longer balls that are played forward to him at times as well, he's so hard to pick up, as you're saying there. But when crosses are going in, he's invariably across that defender. He's on the move first. He's great when, even if the ball's clipped up to the far post, because he times his headers to head them back across goal into dangerous areas. But when it's a cross that's played in with pace, that's what he loves because of how quick he reacts to it. I think he picks up the flight so much quicker than most of the players in the game right now. And that's why I think he's going to score or get close to 20 goals again this season. If not more than 20, he'll certainly get close to that. His movement in the area is just second to none. There's probably other areas of his game that he probably needs to improve on. But when he's attacking crosses, I don't think there's anybody better in the Premier League at the moment.
Okay, interesting. We haven't touched too much on Liverpool this evening. We'll do that tomorrow. Can't fit everything in this evening. And I know you didn't see the Liverpool game in full. But big picture for a second here. Let's make two assumptions for a second. So the Lukaku deal is going through. That's going to happen. Lukaku at Chelsea is, you would think, very promising from their point of view. Let's assume for a second Kane doesn't go to City. Let's just say Daniel Levy digs in. Ain't happening. Kane stays here. You can offer 120 million, not enough time for us to spend the money and get value in the transfer market. So Kane stays. And who knows, that could go either way. If Kane stays and Lukaku, the Chelsea move goes through, and in fact it may have gone through, it's pretty much fait accompli. How is that big four going to come out in the wash then in 9 months' time, and why?
Yeah, I think I fancy City to still go on and win it. I think Chelsea and United will be very, very close. And you know, I couldn't necessarily say that it's going to be either one of those that finish in the top spot come the end of the season. But I just fancy, I probably only just fancy Man United just to pick Chelsea for second spot. But I think those three are going to comfortably finish in the Champions League positions this season, though, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be very similar to you in that. And I would have Liverpool as fourth. I mean, who knows? They could catch fire again. There's just some, it's hard to imagine the same group of players reaching the heights of pretty much the same group of players of 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think that as well. I do. Two years older, it's not past it. Don't get me wrong with that. There's still an unbelievable amount of quality. There's, you know, I only saw the result this weekend, so I've not had the chance to catch up on that just yet. But they will be strong in the big games. They've got players that could hurt City. They could hurt Chelsea, Man United. I do think that. But I just don't see them being in the top two positions. I don't see it, Joe. I just don't see, from what happened last season, for the amount of goals he conceded. Van Dijk coming back in, yes, could make a difference, although it might take him a bit of time to get fully right and get himself going forward. But I just don't see it. I don't see it, Joe. I don't see they've got enough, and there's been enough spent on that team to seriously go and go again and seriously challenge at the very top of the Premier League. I just don't think, with the money that United have spent, City have spent, and even Chelsea now, they probably look the fourth best in my eyes. I think that's the way it'll be across the course of the season.
Yeah, and like, it's not something I feel certain about either. So like Van Dijk, 10 months out, and Matip is back as well after his 7 months out, and Gomez was on the bench as well, and Konate, who they signed, was on the bench. So suddenly, you know, injuries have all cleared up. Let's presume in 4 or 5 games Van Dijk is back to Van Dijk, and Matip similarly. That frees up two of the best fullbacks in the game to do their thing. You would think the midfield will be, what, Henderson, Fabinho, Thiago, with Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Milner a little bit older in support. And then, you know, Jota started on Saturday, and then Firmino came off the bench and scored. Salah looked, you know, lively. It's can Mane hit his old form? But, you know, like, there's still enough there to make you think, God, yeah, there's no reason they shouldn't win, like, the vast majority of the games. It's just, I don't know, the staleness last year was so striking. They just looked so finished last year.
Yeah, I'd probably go along with that to an extent. I just think it's, yeah, you've got that defensive structure that's coming back into it, and all those defenders that you mentioned there, that's going to give them a bit more stability. Yes, of course it is. But there is other elements, as you say, that they've gone from such a high over those couple of seasons, winning the Champions League, then the Premier League. Then last season, the way that they played and that, you know, that home streak, was it 7 games losing streak at home? You'd never would have thought that in a million years was ever going to happen with Liverpool under Klopp anyway. Mm. So I think they've got too far a distance to travel to get back to the other teams. That's my feeling on it. I think they're still going to be strong and have a say in the title and how it's going to go, because I think they'll have the ability to beat some of the better sides, I feel, that's in the Premier League. But I think a sustained challenge might be beyond them this season. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully all four go for it. I mean, I don't really think in Premier League era we've had three, four really in the mix, really going for it in the final few games of the season. So it tends to be just one or two, doesn't it? Kev, we will let you carry on. Thanks so much for pulling over, Joe, and joining us. Much appreciated. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Cheers, Joe. Take it easy.
Kevin Caban, join us on the line. Football and Off the Ball with thanks to Paddy Power for information on responsible gambling. The place to go is gamblingcare.ie. We'll take a short break.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.